Thanks for tuning in to The Record on KUOW Seattle. We're on Twitter at KUOW. I'm Bill Radke, and yes, you heard it by now, a robot is coming for your job.
New worries about robots taking jobs. More than 3 out of 4 teens say they're concerned about having a successful career.
Machines will replace traditional labor, quote, like the sun comes up in the morning.
Now there's a website that predicts how likely you are to lose your job to a robot.
You just type in your occupation and it shows you the probability.
That's right. Even the guy who tells you if your job will be taken by a robot, that person's out of business, replaced by an algorithm. Researchers at Oxford University in England, in fact, predicted almost half of all American jobs could be replaced by automation in the next 20 years. This idea that some jobs done by humans could be done by computer or robot has got 1 in 4 Americans very worried, according to a Pew survey from last year. Not as worried about our coming robot coworkers are the Swedes. Why not? I asked the European economics correspondent for the New York Times, Peter Goodman. Peter, welcome to KUOW.
Thanks very much.
Why are Swedish people not worried about robots taking their jobs?
Swedish people are not worried because they're not worried about very much economically, as it happens. They have a lot of faith in the Nordic model, under which workers are protected. Jobs are not protected. A lot of jobs are wiped out by technology, but the workers end up getting pretty generous unemployment insurance. They get job training that's some of the most effective job training in the world. Everybody gets 480 days of parental leave when a family has a child to be apportioned as the couple would have it over the first 5 years of the child. Everyone has health insurance regardless of whether they're employed. University education is free. And so as a result, people in Swedish society have this sense that at work, they're valued as humans. And there is this social safety net that's available if it turns out a machine can come along and do what humans can do more efficiently.
Let's take an example. Mining is big in Sweden. You went to a Swedish mineral mine where I would think robots could replace a lot of dangerous mining jobs. What did workers tell you about whether they think they're going to have jobs? What happens to them?
Well, literally every worker I met there expressed confidence that if their job was no longer needed because automation could come along and do what they do more quickly, more safely, then there'd be something else for them to do there. And that's not some fantasy. That's something that they've actually lived. I mean, they have a system of negotiating wages in Sweden in which national unions sit down with their counterparts at the National Employers Association for that industry. And they have a look at what the competitive pressures are that year, what sort of productivity they've seen. Productivity is a key economic measurement that involves, you know, how much stuff of value is produced per human being, hour of work. And this model in Sweden has traditionally generated higher wages when companies are made more productive. So the Swedish worker at this mine, and not just at this mine, but at other places I visited in Sweden, has lived experience that says, if I go along, if I help my company make more money, I'm going to end up with more money and greater job security. And that's what people said. They said, if we stop productivity, then we're consigning ourselves to a lack of profitability, and that's not good for anybody. It's not good for management. It's not good for workers.
Well, exactly, Peter. Again, the headline of the New York Times piece is the robots are coming and Sweden is fine. But what are the odds that the confident Swedes are wrong?
Well, you know, they could be wrong. I mean, one issue that we haven't talked about in the Swedish context is, you know, Sweden's only a country of 10 million people. They've seen increasing numbers of immigrants who have lower skills in an economy that's very much been built around employment, focused on high skill areas. I mean, Sweden has very consciously said, we're not going to compete with China and India and Mexico and try to drop wages down and try to make things cheaply. We're going to focus on areas where we can provide some creativity, engineering know-how, and produce goods for global consumption that in many cases are very expensive and involve high wages. And that works fine so long as everybody's got high skills to participate. You start bringing in lower skilled immigrants and you maintain a generous social safety net, and the politics there potentially change where there's a backlash if large numbers of people are now depending on the social safety net for a good portion of their lives. Moreover, you know, no one knows the extent of the job losses from automation. And if it turns out that this time really is different and we're not going to see the same extent of job creation to go along with job destruction, then an awful lot of models are going to be wrong. But I mean, I think the key takeaway here is that in the United States, we tend to see Sweden and Norway and Finland, the Nordic model in general, as something other than capitalism. Like, well, this is socialism. We have different values. You can't have Google and Facebook and Amazon without this sort of brutal form of capitalism we practice in the United States. And I mean, the takeaway from Sweden is that doesn't really seem to be true. I mean, in fact, if everyone's got health insurance, you're more likely to have people who lose jobs go get job training that puts them in line to do something more interesting and lucrative down the road. You're more likely to have people quit their jobs that they're not enjoying and go take a chance on a startup knowing that their family isn't going to lose access to healthcare. By doing so, that by itself is an important takeaway.
Well, Americans have heard about utopian Scandinavia for a long time, but voters here so far don't want a big Swedish-type government and all the taxes that come with it, or even union protections. That's what voters are telling us here. So do you think automation will put enough Americans out of work that we would start demanding more of a safety net, a health insurance and job guarantees, et cetera?
I do think that as we become aware of the degree to which technology is evolving quickly to the point where, you know, we're not just talking about people who work in call centers or accountants whose jobs are subject to automation, but really any job that involves routine activity, anything that can be turned into a routine, can then be broken down into a kind of computer code. I mean, people think airline pilots could be automated, radiologists, some parts of their jobs can be automated. The McKinsey Global Institute put out a study sometime in the last couple of years in which they broke down the tasks of jobs. They looked at every job and they said, well, what exactly does it mean to be a nurse? A nurse, you know, spends X amount of time on this and Y amount of time on that. And they looked at the percentage of tasks that can be automated. And the takeaway there was that, you know, plenty of white collar jobs could be automated as well. As we start to see the impacts, and we haven't really seen broad impacts yet, no doubt there could be a change to our political system and what we expect from government and what we're willing to pay for government. I mean, it's interesting that in Silicon Valley, which tends to be fairly libertarian, there's been an embrace of the so-called universal basic income, this idea that the government writes a check that pays for basic sustenance for every citizen, because there is this real fear, you know, to your point, that the machines are coming so fast and they're gonna be so evolved so quickly that there are gonna be large numbers of people whose labors are simply not needed, and we've got to find some way for those people to pay their bills and go get training for something else and go find out what it is that they'd like to spend their hours on. So, you know, technology tends to change our understanding of our relationship with government, of our responsibilities as citizens, and our willingness to pay for things that, you know, previously may look like extravagances. We'll have to see how this plays out.
Peter Goodman is the European economics correspondent for The New York Times. Peter, thanks for writing the piece about Sweden and talking to us.
Thanks so much for your interest.
Now, to glimpse the future where humans and robots work together, you don't have to go far. KUOW's Joshua McNichols and Carolyn Adolf found it about 25 miles from our studio at an Amazon warehouse in Kent. They were there reporting for the latest episode of Primed, which is KUOW's podcast about what happens when Amazon comes to your town. Joshua, Carolyn, welcome.
Hey.
Hey.
What did you see in the Amazon warehouse?
Well, first, you can't deny that there is sort of a beauty to watching a warehouse act like an organism. I mean, it's got beauty. It's a well-functioning machine or an organism. It's got, like, instead of veins, it's got conveyor belts shuttling all the little packages around, which are sort of automatically shot down these little slides that go into the correct van that's going to the correct location. Or you've got these robotic drive units that are, you know, people used to run around to grab things off the shelves, but now you've got these drive units that carry the shelves to the workers, and they sort of dance and pirouette around, or maybe they're like white blood cells or something, to use the organism metaphor, mm-hmm. but they bring the goods to you.
Okay, so. A worker robot dance. That sounds so harmonious, but are the Amazon warehouses always going to employ both the machines and the humans?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, if you ask Amazon, they say everywhere where we have brought in robots, we have hired more people because it enables us to get, you know, packages to people faster, to have this system and so well organized. And that makes more customer orders for us, and that allows us to hire more people, right? Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, you know, we definitely see some jobs that are on the cusp of being taken over by robots. For example, people whose jobs are to count things or doing things that are repetitive in the way that your last guest mentioned that could be replaced by some code. They just require a little bit too much human thought right now for them to be replaced by robots at this particular moment.
Well, we just heard reasons why Scandinavian countries, the Swedish in particular, don't worry so much about automation. Carolyn, why do American workers have such a different perspective from that?
Well, they have such a different perspective because they're in a totally different framework. I mean, here we still have these tortured sentiments about whether corporations are persons, and we think a lot as well about individual opportunity, which there's a flip side to that always, which is risk to individuals. So we haven't built the strong safety net that you see in the Nordic countries. Mm-hmm. We also haven't built the tax system to fund anything like a strong social safety net. In fact, we're the reverse. We're a tax haven that believes in the individual risk.
Yes.
So that puts us all in the soup.
That's right. We're all in the soup. And we were discussing with the New York Times correspondent about how whether the United States voter is going to become anything more like the Swedish voter, we'll see. But, you know, machines have been taking jobs for a long time. This isn't a new concept. We have managed to survive the automatic teller machine. Why does our future look very different now, if it does?
Well, the thing that's really different is that artificial intelligence, machine learning, neural networks are basically changing the kinds of work that robots can do. And on the one hand, you've got Amazon saying, no, you know, this is just more of the same. It's sort of an expansion, a slight expansion of what robots can do. But then we have other experts who are saying, no, this is fundamentally different, and it will change the rate at which robots can replace humans because they can do more of these thinking times kinds of jobs. They can learn how to discern small objects from each other. They can adapt to small changes in their work environment and continue to do their repetitive work. So some experts are saying, you know, the pace will change so rapidly that we cannot rely on the past to sort of tell us what's going to happen in the future. That model no longer holds.
Okay, Carolyn, let's assume then that maybe there's not enough work for us all to do. I talked to that New York Times correspondent about a universal basic income to just pay people anyway. Who's pushing for that idea, and where is it catching on?
It's really interesting to see that it's actually some of the big tech leaders. It's Mark Zuckerberg praising the idea in his convocation speech at Harvard, painting it as one of the cornerstones of a utopian society of the future. And then the other one is Elon Musk, who is, you know, he has his satellite office for satellites here on the east side.
Mm-hmm. And satellite office for satellites in his case.
Yes, yeah. Yes, exactly. But, you know, the Tesla and space, you know, his space missions, and he's actually concerned about it. He says he believes that a universal basic income will be necessary. It's just that he doesn't understand how people are going to find purpose in their lives without work. So he has grave concerns about that, but he says it's just something that must be faced.
And who thinks it won't work? Who's against the idea of a universal basic income?
Well, for a lot of people, it doesn't pass the smell test. For a guy like Douglas Rushkoff, who's written numerous books about the change that, you know, in all of our thinking that we have to apply because we're in a technological society, books like Program or Be Programmed, he says, well, just a cotton pick in minute, where's this money that is magically going to be found so that we can all continue to make all of our orders to Amazon and have our Uber rides? Mm-hmm. Where is government going to find all this money to pay us off to sit at home? There's just something that doesn't seem right.
Mm-hmm. Finally, Joshua, an Oxford study estimates that by 2060, artificial intelligence and robots will be able to do all these tasks from self-driving cars to surgery. How do we prepare for that future?
Well, we need a safety net. And if government is not going to provide the safety net to help us re-educate ourselves to adopt a new position or a new work, then we need to do it ourselves by embracing lifelong learning. Mm-hmm. And we can no longer sort of assume that we're going to get one education and it'll serve us our whole lives. We've got to be able to continually adapt to our environment. And the more creative the work you do, the longer it will hold out before it is replaced by robots. So, you know, go for a liberal arts education as well as some STEM stuff, but don't skimp on the poetry, you know?
Yep. David Sedaris could still have a job in this future.
That's right. It's going to take an AI a long time to replace David Sedaris.
KUOW reporters Joshua McNichols and Carolyn Adolph host our podcast called Primed. It's about what happens when Amazon comes to your town. You can hear the latest episode by going to our website, KUOW.org, and the next episode drops on Thursday. Carolyn, Joshua, thanks a lot.
January 25th.
Yeah.
Sorry. January 25th.
Never do that.
All of a sudden, the deadline just crept on you. No, January 25th. Thank you to you both.
Thanks.
Thank you.
It's The Record on KUOW.